The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Talk is Jericho.
Let's talk about when you became the champion. I'm not sure I even know that story. How did you find out you were going to get it? Who'd you beat?
Well, what had happened, AAA had started because Conan wasn't happy with Paco. And Antonio Pena, as you know, he started AAA.
Pena used to be the booker with Paco,
correct,
right?
Yeah. And so started AAA, and we had a tournament for the title. So I can't remember what one day, but I had a meeting with Paco. So I'm sitting in his office, and he just said, "Oh, by the way, I'm planning to make you the champ." I said, "Really?" So I knew it was me and Rayo in the finals, right?
Tournament.
Yes. So I asked Paco. I said, "Well, does Rayo know this?" And he says, "No, he doesn't. And there's nothing he can do." I said, "I know there's nothing you can do." So, but I lost respect for him that night because we had the match.
Paco or Rayo?
For Rayo. For those of you who don't know, Rayo de Jalisco was a famously popular wrestler from Guadalajara. His father wrestled. He wrestled, and
he was a junior. Right?
I think his son. He's got another son, Hijo de Junior. Yeah. So you know, he just wouldn't do it clean in the middle, you know. And it was all, you know, Grand Marcus was his. He had his second get involved. I'm like, "Brother, you can't do this clean." "No, amigo, I have to stay strong here." And so, you know, ever since that day, you know, I just lost respect for him.
Right. Yeah. But you had a lot of heat, though, in Mexico as the champion.
Oh, yeah. I was stabbed.
What did you do?
Just
stabbed?
Stabbed. And every time I got hurt, it was my fault because I was in the crowd. On two occasions, one time at the Pista, I was messing around in the crowd, and Porky was there, and he saved me. And then Inez,
a fan was trying to beat you.
Fan, yeah, a fan. It was actually a woman that spat at me. I mean, a woman, and I was livid.
She just went spit on me.
She spat at me, and I didn't know what to do. You know what I mean? And Porky was there, and you know, he got me out of there because, you know, people were getting closer and they were throwing stuff. And then another time we were wrestling in a baseball field in Neza. I'll never forget it. I threw him out of the ring. We're on the floor, and I'm bent over his opponent. I'm sorry, his partner, right? Trying to pick him up or something, and I feel somebody hit me with a chair. But I look up, but Porky's standing in front of me, so I know it's not him. And what a great soul he is, man, because he just jumped on me and he was hitting me. But every punch and strike, he was pushing me towards the locker room.
Oh.
Because the fans were just, they were just coming in, and there's no security.
Yeah.
There's no security. Another time, the stabbing, I got stabbed once again out in the crowd. So for you youngsters, you're a lot safer being in the ring,
right,
than especially on indie shows, because there's no security and
or drinking
or limited security. Mm-hmm. And I'm out there and I'm tussling with somebody. It wasn't a knife, it was a pencil.
Ouch.
A pencil, which I still have the scar.
You can see, yeah.
I know, what size is that? I can't remember now.
There's a scar right there. Yeah.
And got jabbed, immediately turned around, didn't know who it was, and got back into the ring and just stayed there because it's just rough.
And amazing, too, like I'm thinking back, no team doctor for when I can remember.
No,
no trainer, really.
No. Sindicato. Cindy Carter, you got a limb hanging off. Well, Cindy Carter can see you a week this Thursday. Make an appointment.
Well, it reminds me for some reason about Senior Banalis.
Oh, God. Yeah. You know, what a sweetheart he was. He was this was an all-time wrestler who he stayed in the business mainly because he spoke English. Mm-hmm. And tough guy in his day, you know, little short, stocky guy. And just a funny guy. I would always challenge him, you know, just messing around the locker room. And he would tell me, hey, we can do it here or we can do it upstairs. If we do it here, it won't be the same thing. I said, okay.
I remember he told me one time, you know what the problem is with this company? I said, what? He goes, too many foreigners.
Yeah. I remember him being on the phone once and Norman the Lunatic,
Mike Shaw
was there. So I wasn't actually in the office. I was outside the office, and Pistol Pez Watley had called. So he's talking to Adolfo, and he keeps referring to him as Ted Bailey. Okay, Tez Bailey. Okay, just
Pez
send
Watley,
a picture.
Tez Bailey.
Okay, just send the pictures. Mike Shaw's like, no wonder nobody can get booked here. You can't get the names.
So many characters like that, though. Like, remember the Rangel, the referee.
Robert Rangel, he was one of the most popular referees of all time because he used to ref like El Santos matches and Atlantis. I mean, all the way until the end of his life, and he would mess with me. He'd stick his finger in my ear or pull my mustache, and then he'd run and hide behind Haku. And he'd challenge me, come on, baby, come on.
Yeah, he spoke like, come on, baby.
Come on, baby, come on.
Last night, how many women do you have? And then he'd make like a sex motion for three more women. It's like one girl, two girl, three girl, like pumping his skinny little hips. I remember one time, you shut up, you bag of bones, you're still alive?
Oh gosh, he was hilarious. I actually have on film because once in a while I'll watch some of the old matches.
You used to film some stuff.
Oh yeah, and we'll talk about that later, a lot later. He wouldn't take crap from anybody. I mean, it doesn't. You were a young guy, big guy, over, you know, top guy, and there was a match. It was me and I forgot who else, but Rayo was in the match. And now Rayo de Jalisco was always like a top face. And Rayo tried to tackle him and pull him down. And we come back from commercial break and you just see Rangel taking a swing at him with a kick. He didn't care. He didn't care.
There was some great performers in Mexico.
That's one thing
that people like might be a little bit misinformed about Lucha Libre, because you said it is very fast, but so there's some guys there.
Solid guys. Wagner, Silver King Tejano, Dandy, Blue Panther.
Negro.
Negro Casas. I put him up there with Ric Flair.
I agree.
Harley Race, Bret Hart. I mean, he's a guy that I was his partner for about a year, and I would stand on the apron and just be fascinated with what he would do and how he would do it and how he would think. Mm. And I would get caught up in just watching him, and he'd say, magic. And then when he was shooting with me, he'd say, Smiley! I said, okay, what do you want me to do? Hold him down. I'm sorry. but he was just incredible. And I remember you saying, in World Championship Wrestling, when we wanted to bring him in, I think Eric Bischoff at the time said, we've got 15 Mexicans here already. You said, you don't understand. This guy is completely different. This is Negro Casas. Mm-hmm. He's just, I've seen him make people cry, make them laugh. I mean, he's just amazing. And when you look at him, he looks like nothing.
Yeah, he's just a normal,
nothing, just, you
small
know,
guy,
yeah,
no body.
Nothing, you know what I mean? And he's still working
and
at a top level.
He's still good.
He's still
I saw
good.
A match he had last year. He's 10 years older than me, so he would have been 54, 55 at the time.
Yeah.
And he tore it up.
He's amazing. You know? He was. I learned so much from him because he was generous. He would give me rides here and there. And like we all do as young kids, you know, we have a match and the match is bad. And we're like, damn, I shouldn't have done that. Why did I do this? And damn, God, I feel so bad. And why? And Smiley, shut up. Don't worry. Tomorrow you have another match. forget about it. And he was right.
Yeah.
And we have, you know, students here.
He gave me that exact same advice, by the way. Exactly.
And they go through the same, oh, I should have done this. I said, first of all, you've been here 6 months. Okay. You're going to make mistakes, right? And guess what? You're going to make a lot more mistakes. And there's no wrestler on the planet that will tell you that they've had a perfect match.
Mm-hmm.
So we all look back because we all have egos, you know, say, oh, I could have done that better. I should have held on a little longer. I shouldn't have let go. I should have punched him harder or bigger. So, yeah, Negro Casas.
Okay, Smiley.
Okay. In fact, his family, Heavy Metal, Valino, yeah, and Tropicasas,
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
his dad,
and they're all still around and active.
Felino is the Tony the Tiger.
Tony costume. The Tiger, yeah.
I remember we would go to, because Negro worked in the office as well,
yeah.
But there'd always be like a lineup of people to see Paco.
Yeah, and Negro straight in the kayfabe.
He had like a back room of stairs?
Yeah, he did. He actually had like, it was almost like a stairwell. It was like a cellar. So you will go up through the front door, speak to Lupita. Hi, Lupita. ¿Cómo estás, Chris? ¿Cómo bien? Paco? Yeah, in 10 minutes. So you sit there. You're thinking, okay, I'm sitting right here. He can't pass me. Then 2 hours later, she tells you, oh, he's gone. Where do you go? You know what I mean? But he had his kayfabe stairs at the back.
He would just leave, yeah.
He would just leave, yeah. He would just leave. I wouldn't tell you.
Yeah. They'd just show up at Arena Mexico, just tanked.
Yeah.
Tell you how great you were.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Talk is Jericho.
Let's talk about a mutual friend of ours, sure. that a lot of people don't know a lot about our Art Bar.
Art Bar, yeah.
I mean, everyone knows the legacy of Eddie Guerrero, how great Eddie was.
Yeah.
You know, passed away early. So did Art.
Yeah.
Art was the guy that was
Art
better than Eddie at the time.
Yeah, yeah. Art was second generation. His brother Jesse also wrestled, and Art was just a character. Art was... Once again, Mexico was a great learning experience. Just meeting guys, you know, like yourself and Art Barr and Haku, Eddie Guerrero, and just seeing how they thought about things, how they approached things. And I think Art was one of those like last of the carnies, because if he could work you, he'd work you. And great worker in the ring, loved to put himself over. Oh, brother. There was 15,000 people there. Really? That's arena only holds 8. No, the rest of them bought tickets just to listen. Remember you say stuff like that?
With the chewing tobacco.
With the chewing tobacco.
Completely straight face. No, brother. You don't understand. The little hanging from the rafters.
Yeah, he was a great, great guy. And... imagine the pandemonium that we cause living in the Plaza Madrid. It was me, you, him, Vamp.
Tonga,
Mondo. I think Hector was there.
Chavo for a while.
Chavo.
Miguel Perez.
That night we went out bowling together.
Halcyon bowling. I talked with Tonga about that last night.
He remembers?
Oh, yeah. I told him, I remember him just throwing an overhand bowling ball.
We're like, Haku, don't hit us. Throw it that way.
Like, and you, next time you go bowling, try and pick it up because you're going to throw it over your shoulder. Just.
Yeah. So Art was a guy that, you know, he had his issues. And but back then, especially to me, it was so much of a novelty because I was never experienced to that. You know, being trained by Malenko, then spending time in Japan, you know, the whole concept was you get to the ring and you, the arena, and you do your squats and you stretch and you do all this stuff. Whereas, you know, you went there and now you see something that was totally opposite. Guys smoking in the locker room and drinking, and then Art came, and then he had his weakness.
Once again, we were all rock stars at that time.
Yeah.
Whatever it was you're into, you could get it at the blink of an eye.
Yeah. So. I just didn't like what I saw, what it did to him. I think it was you and I that went to his place one night, and he was just zonked out of his mind, chewing tobacco all over his shirt, yeah. just stumbling around. And I think his greeting was, "You two bastards don't have a home to go to," because we went there late, knocking on his door.
Yeah, looking for something to do.
Yeah. Well, watching tapes.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing him for the last time, because I think you had moved out and he had lent you his key to his suite.
No, I had a smaller room.
Smaller room, but he had a suite.
Yeah, and the reason, and just to go back to what we said earlier, you told me to ask to stay at the Plaza because it was a nice place.
Yes, yeah.
But Art and Eddie had
I had a suite too.
You had a suite too, two floors.
And Bam too. Oh yeah.
Yeah, I had the jobber room. You guys had the suite. So we went. So he went to Portland and gave me a key and said, "If you ever want to come watch movies," which he had never done before.
Yeah, it was just so strange. It was just so strange and surreal, because I remember being there and he's just out cold, and you and I were watching tapes and we're, you know, drinking and just having, and Art's just, you know, just slouching the couch, just out of it, and then, uncharacteristic of him, said to me, "Norman, is there anything that you want back from the States?" Because he was going home for Thanksgiving. And I said, as a joke, "Bring me back a pumpkin pie." And he looked at me and goes, "Okay." And never saw him again. It was, I think I had moved out and I was living in my apartment at the time, and then I got a phone call from Conan, and Conan told me he was dead. I said, it's weird, because as human beings we always say, "Well, I just saw him last week." Well, it only takes a second to die.
Right.
I said, What do you mean? And he's dead. And I said, "How?" "Well, you know, they don't know, and the speculation of this and that." And I was like, "Oh my God." And so then I called I called Vamp. He was in Acapulco at the time. It was a Wednesday, because we did Acapulco on a Wednesday night, and called him. I don't know where you were.
I was at the Plaza.
Okay, yeah. And didn't we go into his room?
Well, but you called me too.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
And this was the first time that I'd ever had, you know, you have your grandparents die or whatever, but it was the first time I'd ever experienced real death.
Yeah.
And I remember when you called me, I fell on the floor. Like, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
I'll never forget you saying, "Art's dead."
Yeah.
Same thing, like, what?
Yeah. You know what? Now I recall that. Yeah. So.
Then we did go to his room.
Yeah.
You know, just to hang out in there
and.
You know.
But it was sad, and it's just a shame. I think over the course of our careers, I'm not saying that our hearts become hardened to it, but we've lost so many friends.
Yeah.
So many coworkers that, you know, maybe you weren't their best friend, but you've crossed paths with them.
Yeah.
Over the years, and. It's just sad. I always think of the person who has to make the phone call to the parents, or to the son, or to the children. I mean, you know, your son passed away in a hotel room. How
isn't it weird too, how you had the same experience that I had? Something very uncharacteristic.
Yeah,
like him giving me the key to his room, which he had never done. And him asking you if you wanted him back.
Yeah,
I almost wondered, did he know? Deep down inside.
It was weird, because like I said, Art was a worker. Mm-hmm. I mean, he would invite me to go out to eat, and we'd go to the Zona Rosa, right?
It's a big party.
Yeah, big party. Yeah, bars and restaurant, and you know, eat and drink and everything, and then the check would come. "Oh, I forgot my wallet. My Art, come on." or his other one was, "I only have dollars, I don't have pesos." I said, "Well, they take dollars here too." "No, but the exchange rate's real bad." You know, so
to me, when Art died, that was the end of Mexico for me.
Yeah,
I stayed a little longer, but
yeah,
the vibe changed.
Yeah.
Reality kind of hit.
Change, yeah.
And also the peso
dropped,
died like about 2 weeks later.
Dropped. Yes, it
huge
dropped. It dropped. I had money in the bank, and it dropped, and somebody told me, "Oh, don't worry about it. It'll just last a couple of weeks, and you know, it'll go back up." Well, that was 22 years ago.
It's still the same. It went from it was like, I'll get this wrong at first, but it was $3 or like 3 to 1.
So three, yeah.
So if you had 1,000 pesos, that would be $333.
Yeah.
Then it switched to 7 to 1.
Yeah.
So if you got 1,000 pesos, it'd be like $150.
Yeah. Yeah. It was horrible.
And I remember Paco saying, like, "There's nothing I can do. I can't pay you more money."
Exactly.
It's the same amount of pesos.
I had the same conversation with him, and at that time was it was the end of '94. Mm-hmm. In fact, you and I were in Acapulco. Remember we did that interview together?
Right.
Yeah. Which I still have.
You do?
I, I gave you a copy, right?
I'm not sure. I'd like to see it.
I have it. Yeah, it's funny because we speak like 18 words of Spanish between us. And this guy, in this interviewer, he's doing his best to stretch this thing out.
And we're trying, but we don't know the same thing. ¿Qué hora? ¿Qué pasó? ¿Cuándo luchas?
Yeah. So it was at the end of 1994. I had been there for 4 years or 4.5 years because I actually went back later on for Promo Azteca, and there was no money. The houses were going down, and I was miserable. And I remember doing a hair match with La Fiera. This is where you have a match, and the wage or the bet is whoever loses the match gets their hair shaved. So I ended up doing that in December of 94, which marked the end of the season, because in Mexico, which I still think it happens, right, that they have a season.
The ice capades the ice comes ring, to town or
yeah,
something.
Yeah. So
they closed Arena Mexico for 3 months.
Yeah, yeah. So, and then the houses on that were usually huge, but even on that night, it was nothing there. There was nobody there. It was like a third full, and I was just tired. And it's strange. I'm not sure if you've ever experienced this. I was so concerned about getting hurt. Mm. I was just—it's like every day I would have these matches, and sometimes you're in there with guys who can go, and you want to accommodate them. You know, Tejano, Silver yeah, King, Wagner, those guys,
Gandhi, yeah.
And they want to do this, and then, okay, second fall this. Oh my God! But I just had this thing in my head that I was going to get hurt. Mm. You know, I mean, seriously hurt, because my heart wasn't in it. So I just decided to leave. But yeah. But Mexico was great.
Yeah. Like you said, at the time we were there, it was a boom.
Yeah.
And I always...
Sean Morley came through.
See, I was gone at that point.
Yeah.
Like, you know, to me, right after, because I think I lasted for another maybe year, but yeah. less time.
Yeah.
Because my last time was about 95.
Yeah.
And like you said, it's just like the kind of the vibe had changed.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
you experienced the whole second birth in WCW.
Yeah.
With...
I was lucky there too. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And when I say that, or when you say that I experienced it, I just happened to be at the right place at the right time.
Because they were bringing in so many guys.
Yes.
And once again, you know, you mentioned Chris Adams. Well, he was there.
Yeah.
And this guy was
Chris Adams was
Smiley
there.
Comes in,
yeah.
which
yeah.
is, it was great.
Yeah.
And you're just another guy on the roster for
that
a while.
That was an experience in itself. It was to watch Vampiro and Conan grow up and become like Elvis. I mean, literally... girls chasing them and being in a car with Vampiro, and the fans are rocking it back and forth, and I'm scared for my life that they're going to tip this car over, and then going to World Championship Wrestling and witnessing the Goldberg thing and you know, Hall and Nash coming
NWO,
in
NWO yeah.
NWO and just everything just magnified by 10, you know, the houses and we were working in domes, remember, like the yeah. San Antonio Dome, the Georgia
Dome.
Did about
6 nitros in a row in domes.
In domes, yeah. in domes. And
St. Louis.
It was just ridiculous. So in the beginning, I would only come in for the shows that we would do here in Orlando. Mm.
Two weeks every three months. Worldwide.
Yeah, 2 weeks every 3 months. So this is a shout out to my friend, Billy Kidman, who once said to me, and he totally confused me, he said to me in front of some of the boys in the locker room, he says, "Who makes the most money here in this company?" And I'm thinking to myself, who makes the most money? I'm thinking, you know, who knows, you know, Sting, you know? Mm-hmm. And he goes, "No, Norman, Smiley, and Sting, because Smiley only works once every 3 weeks, every 3 months, sorry, because he's in Mexico doing absolutely nothing in paid." Thanks, Pete.
But how did you break out of the pack to become like the Screaming Smiley and the Wiggle and all that
stuff?
You
know what's strange was that I was there and I felt that I was a good hand, right? And I would have my matches and everything, but nobody could care less. Mm-hmm. And I remember talking to guys like Conan and Scott Hall and saying, "Man, just be yourself," you know? And I remember I was watching the Martin Lawrence show once. And Martin Lawrence was talking to a friend of his, and he was saying how he was going to take this girl out, you know, for a date. And he emotioned like, you know, the wiggle thing.
Kind of like spanking.
Spanking, yeah, like, yeah, yeah, yeah. So I said, so I chuckled at it. So I thought to myself, wow, if I'm chuckling at this, and it's really not that funny, but it was different, let me try it. So I was working with somebody, and I slammed him. I said, "Stay down." And I just stood in front of the hard cam and I just said, bang, 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 bang. And placement notes. I think it was Nick Patrick was the referee. I saw him laughing at me and he turned away. So afterwards, Terry Taylor, who was an agent there and is also now a trainer here at the PC, cornered me afterwards. He says, "What were you doing out there?" And I said, the first thing that came into my mind, I was riding a horse. So he said, whatever it was, keep doing it. It's hilarious. Hmm. So then I learned how to incorporate it like physically in matches. I worked with Chavo Jr. once, and one time he gave me it was like a spot, boom, 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 right into the wheelbarrow. So instead of him, jumping up and giving me a bulldog, I just held him there. So he's in a pushing position while having his legs wrapped around my waist. I think we were in Charleston. And the place went nuts. I mean, it was a bang, bow, 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 bow. And Arn loved it. And Arn actually laughed. And Arn never laughed.
Yeah, never.
He never smiles, you know.
Damn, Smiley. Man. That big wig was funny.
Yeah, so, and then when Russo and Ferrara came in, I was honored that they even knew who I was. So they requested to have a meeting, and they sat me down, and they pitched this whole idea about me thinking I was the toughest guy in the world and blah, blah, blah. And then they mentioned the dreaded word, the hardcore division. So at the beginning of the meeting, I was sitting upright, but as the meeting progressed, I'm just slouching down, right? So Vince Russo is saying, and Norman, you know, to top it off, we're going to dress you up in like football gear and hockey gear and this and that. Now I'm looking around for the camera. You know what I mean? You know, being punked. I'm like, really? He goes, yeah. And this is what's going to make it successful. When you get hit, we want you to scream like a girl. I said, really? He said, yeah, trust me, it'll work. And Ed was there, and Ed's just shaking his head up and down vigorously. Yeah, it'll work, it'll work, it'll work. I'm like, oh, my God. So if you consider wrestling to be classical music, I think that I was classically trained by Dean Malenko and Joe and the Father and everything and Gotch. So now I'm taking all this wrestling ability and throwing it out of the window and standing there with headgear on, which I needed with knobs, and just throwing tables at each other and chairs and everything. And it was at the Target Center in Minneapolis. And once again, it was a tournament, and it was who was going to be decided to go on to the finals at the pay-per-view, which was called Mayhem in Toronto, Canada, November of 1999. Certain things I still remember.
Yeah.
And we're at the Target Center, and I'm wrestling Haku and Barb. Okay, and they're working me around and everything, and I'm screaming, and I remember Haku leaning over and saying to me, "Brother, you over now, you over," and he put 14 stitches in my back.
It's like Jaws.
Yeah, I mean, right
yeah,
here,
right yeah, there. Yeah.
Yeah, he put 14 stitches in my back with a chair.
Wow.
And believe me, his intentions was not bad at all. In fact, he was extremely apologetic afterwards, and. Yeah, the hardcore thing was a complete fluke to me. I was happy to have it, because this is a job, right? It's not all the time that you have a regular 9-to-5 that your boss is going to require you to do something that you're going to like that task, mm-hmm. and embrace it. You know, Norman, go and clean the toilets. Mm-hmm. You got to clean the toilets. Yeah. You know what I mean? But working in that division exposed me to working with an idol, with Terry Funk. Which was just, you know, and it's so strange, because up until that point, I think I was working for about 15 years, you know, Mexico and Japan and here and there. So I was seasoned, and I just remember being in the back with Terry and him saying, "Okay, we'll do this and maybe we'll do this. Okay, you got that, Sonny?" "Yes, Mr. Funk." And I get in the ring and the bell rings and I just swallow. So, oh my God, that's Terry Funk over there.
He's going to kill me.
I was nervous. But once you're locked up and you moved around, you know, but he was ahead of his time too. Mm-hmm. I recall watching him live as a 15-year-old kid at the Miami Beach Convention Center against Dusty and Steve Kern and Barry Windham. And even then he was extremely orthodox. He'd throw chairs and take those weird bumps and swing at the fans and everything. And it just seemed like in the blink of an eye, you know, 20 years later, he's doing the same thing, but now he's doing it towards me. You know, but what a nice man. He's just a great, great guy, a legend, old school, and has a ton of passion for the big business. And a guy that I looked up to as a fan, got to meet him and looked up and admired him even more, which is not the case with a lot of people.
That's true. That's true. Getting ready to wrap up.
Yeah.
Two more last questions. If you had to pick one match that stands out as your favorite match you've ever had.
Oof. It'd be tough. There was my first one in Japan, because I was so nervous. It was a different style and so on and so forth. It was a guy called Kazuo Yamazaki. It was June of 1988. And then I had a match one time in Winnipeg. I think you were on the card. It was a hardcore match. It was Knobs, Jerry Toot, and Fit.
Uh-huh.
And we laughed so. I mean, I'm surprised we didn't get fired that night. It was just hilarious. And then another time in Mexico, it was outside of Arena, and it was raining, and the canvas was a plastic canvas. And back then, which I still do now, I used to wear my shooter boots, and I was determined not to get them wet. Well, within 5 minutes, I soaked. So I just went. I'm doing the breaststroke, drop down, and I'm breaststroking. And
just embrace it.
Just splashing around. And I remember the referee coming up to me and said, "Magic, you got to take this serious." I'm like, we're in a swimming pool. There's 4 inches of water on the mat, and there's a big hole in the middle. So it was hard to say. You know, one of my first matches with Joe Malenko, Dean's older brother, who's well accomplished, and 6 months in the business, so he's got me against the ropes. And he says to me, "Rocket," and I'm like, "Ah!" And he just slaps me. He just slaps me. I was, "Oh God, I messed that spot up." So, you know, we have the match and everything, and you know, everything goes well, and we get in the back, and I says, "Joe, thank you," because for those of you who don't know, Joe's the real deal. He was Carl Gotch's top student, next to a kid from Japan called Minoru Suzuki, who's still going, who's an animal.
Yeah.
Had to fight him off of me for 20 minutes. Anyway, so I said, "Joe, thanks for the match and everything." I said, "Joe, just one thing. Your dad never taught me that rocket spot. What is that spot?" He goes, "I didn't say rocket. I said block it." So every time he sees me, he calls, "Hey, Rocket."
Yeah, you mentioned before some of your students that have made it to the top in Roman Reigns and Corbin. Which prospects are here in the
Ooh, we've got a lot of guys. The tag team division is deep. American Alpha, Revival, the Divas are deep, or the Ladies are deep. Mm-hmm. Sasha Banks has gone up. Bailey, Carmella, Asuka. It's just so much talent here. She was trained by actually Fujiwara.
Oh wow!
Yeah, yeah. And I've rolled around the ring with her a little bit, and just, okay, that's enough. I'm good. So and having Nakamura here,
he's something else.
I think once in a while, you come across a performer and he just has that it factor. You know, he doesn't have the greatest body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he doesn't do a lot of things, but he's captivating to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And a very cool guy, and I predict he's going to be a huge star. Huge star. When Kenta gets back healthy, you know, he has a ton of potential. Mm-hmm. So
It's great to see that you're doing so well here, and you deserve it, man. Like I said, no one ever said a bad word about you
yet.
last question. Cuando luchas, Magic?
Cuando lucha.
Thanks to Norman Smiley, Black Magic, for all the great laughs and stories. His laugh is actually infectious. And thanks for giving us a real behind-the-scenes look at the NXT Performance Center. The place is unreal. Give you everything you need to succeed in pro wrestling, including great trainers and instructors like Norman, with a wealth of experience. Such a great personable guy. Everyone loves him now, especially the ladies love Norman because he's super charming, all right? But big thanks to Norman, and thanks to all of you who are supporting Talk is Jericho by doing your online shopping through my Amazon links. You can find my Amazon links at podcast. Pages1.com. You can find them all there. Just click on the Killer Deals button on the top right corner of the page. Then hit the Talk is Jericho button. I got them links for the USA, UK, Canada, A. Every time you use the Talk is Jericho Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a small percentage of the show to help us cover production costs. Buy anything you can think of on Amazon. No extra fees or hidden charges. Once again, podcast1.com. Click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page. Hit the Talk is Jericho button. You also find all my great sponsors on there as well. ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Get 25% off all DDPY merch. And when you buy a max pack or a combo pack, you get a second one for 50% off the price that's already 25% off. Don't forget Loot Crate. Sign up for the WWE Slam Crate now at lootcrate.com/talk. Use the promo code talk to get $3 off your order. So much fun to get those loot crates and find out what's inside. Every month is a different selection of products, t-shirts, dolls, figures, coloring books, everything you can think of is all in there. It's a fun present to give to anybody who loves the WWE. Then there's Nature Box. Go to naturebox.com/Jericho to get 50% off your first order. The best, most nutritious snacks you can have. Bowl and Branch. Go to bowlandbranch.com. Use the promo code Jericho. You get $50 off your first set of the softest, comfiest sheets you're ever going to have. Then there's Geico, TrueCar. All those great sponsors here, and please go check them out. And don't forget to check out on March 15th, 2017. It's the biggest podcast ever. When Mick Foley joins Talk is Jericho, the countdown rolls on just 67 days and counting. We've been talking about this for a year. And speaking of big podcasts, Beyond the Darkness, the latest addition to the Jericho Network and Podcast One, is a blockbuster hit right out of the gates. The first two episodes were all about the super creepy black-eyed kids, and the episode that just came out Monday is an investigation into these sinister shadow people. Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis have a couple great guests on to talk about these things, the shadow people. You want the lights on for this one, go check it out. Hit subscribe on iTunes if you haven't already. Leave Beyond the Darkness a 5-star rating and review, and hit subscribe for all the Jericho Network shows when you're out there. We've got the hilarious Team Tiger Awesome show, pop culture humor at its finest with Mundy, Truly, and Gage. New episodes are out every Sunday. They did a great Christmas episode this past Sunday, the Battle of Christmas Icons. No one's off limits. Santa Claus, the Grinch, John McClane from Die Hard. Check it out. It was very funny. I was laughing my behind off. And those Killing the Town with Storm and Cyrus dropping on Tuesday. Get your PhD in wrestling with two of the most brilliant minds in pro wrestling. Great discussion of today's biz. Tell fantastic stories from their days working together all over the world in ECW. Shane Douglas from ECW was their guest the last couple weeks. Always a outspoken guy. And then, of course, the flagship show, the hugest hit on the Jericho Network, Keeping It 100 with Conan every Thursday. Disco Inferno, Conan, KG bringing the opinions, the funny, the feuds. They had some great, great talk about the presidential election, and from Chael Sonnen as well. So check all that stuff out, and thank you so much for listening. Keep listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next. And this Friday, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Cheap Trick is going to be here. The founder, guitar player, songwriter Rick Nielsen and his son and the new drummer of Cheap Trick, Dax, will be here talking about all things Cheap Trick, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, John Lennon, what it's like being in a band with your dad, the Dream Police, da-na-na-na-na-na. I want you to want me. Your mama's all right. Your daddy's all right. He just seems a little bit weird. Yeah, boy. Said, yeah, boy. And don't give yourself a yeah, boy. Yeah, boy. Yeah, boy. All right, we'll see you next Friday for Cheap Trick right here on Talk is Jericho.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.